Chapter 24. The Hippocrates Society is housed in a charming, if slightly worn, building in Chelsea. The butler takes our coats and ushers us through a wide parlour, where several gentlemen sit smoking cigars, playing chess and arguing politics, and into the largest library I have ever seen. An assortment of mismatched chairs fill out the corners. Several are grouped about the roaring fire, as if there has just been a rousing debate there. The rugs are Persian, and so old that they've worn through in spots. Every single bookcase is stuffed and seems it can hold no more. Medical texts, scientific studies, Greek, Latin, and classic volumes line the shelves. I should like to sit and read for weeks. Dr. Hamilton greets us. He is a man of 70, with white hair gone to mere threads on top.
Ah, you're here. Good, good. Our man has prepared a marvellous feast. Let's not keep him waiting.
There are 12 of us at the table, a lively mix of doctors, writers, philosophers and their wives. The conversation is spirited and fascinating. A bespectacled gentleman at the other end of the table argues vehemently with Dr. Hamilton.
I tell you, Alfred, socialism is the way of the future. Imagine it, economic and social equality among men. No more classes, perhaps the end to poverty. Complete social harmony. Utopia is at hand, gentlemen, and its name is socialism. Ah, Wells, best stick to writing fantastical novels, old boy. I did rather enjoy that time travel story. Bit dotty at the end with the Eloi, though.
A man with ruddy cheeks and a broad belly speaks up.
Wells, perhaps you've confused us with the Fabian Society.
Everyone has a good chuckle at this. Some raise their glasses.
Hear, hear,
they say. The man in the spectacles excuses himself.
I am only sorry that I must take my leave and cannot stay to argue the point with you, but I shall take up the cause when next we meet.
Who was that gentleman? I try to ask quietly.
Mr. Herbert George Wells,
the ruddy-cheeked man answers.
You may know him as H.G. Wells, the novelist. Good man, solid mind, wrong on socialism, though. Life without a queen? Without landowners, but cooperative societies. Anarchy, I say. Sheer madness. Ah, here is dessert.
A silent butler places a great creme soufflé before the man, and he plunges his spoon into it with relish. We discuss science and religion, books and medicine, the social season as well as politics. But it is father who truly commands the table with his wit and tales of India.
And then there is the story of the tiger, but I fear I have already held your attention far too long.
Father says, that merry twinkle back in his eyes. The guests will have their curiosity satisfied.
A tiger?
They cry.
Why, you must tell it.
Delighted, father leans forward. His voice grows hushed.
We had taken a house in Lucknow for a month, hoping to escape the heat in Bombay.
Lucknow!
A woolly-haired gentleman exclaims.
I do hope you didn't meet up with any mutinous Indian sepoys.
The assembled break into arguments about the famous Indian uprising decades before.
To think those savages murdered innocent British citizens, and after all we'd done for them,
one of the wives clucks.